Welcome to the jungle. Hey, tremendous Thursday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Lots of show today. Can't wait to get to it. What's cracking? Welcome to the program. It is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We are out quickly. Let's not waste any time with this. I've got an interview coming up next segment, so let me set it up for you. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. If you know what you want to talk about, hit me up right now. 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on social media, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. Just find me at Jim Rome, at Jim Rome. And if you want, you can still email me directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, so lots of different ways to go with it today. A lot of good topics. Coming up next segment, an interview with an ESPN MMA insider, Ariel Helwani. That's coming up in about 20 minutes. Top of hour number two, a Patriots reporter for NBC Sports Boston, Tom Curran. He's plugged into the Pats. I'll look forward to that. Also coming up in hour number two, a three-time World Series champion, 1989 World Series MVP, Dave Stewart. So, three really good interviews. We are front-loading. They're all in the first half of the program. So, I would encourage you to start dialing right now. I mean, it may seem like that's counterintuitive. Get in. Get in quickly. Maybe you'll get on the air quickly. And then lots of room on the back end. 1-800-636-8686. Meantime, here are some topics for you. Starting with baseball. Now, for the last 8 or 9 months, every time I started a take with Major League Baseball announced, it has been followed by something truly idiotic. And this time, it might be the most idiotic thing of all. Check this. Major League Baseball announced that Dodgers pitcher Joe Kelly has been suspended 8 games. 8 games. And Dodgers manager Dave Roberts has been suspended 1 game for their roles in the bench-clearing incident in Houston on Tuesday night. Now, if you didn't catch that game on Tuesday, or if you've been busy for the past few days, you're probably thinking that Kelly did something pretty nasty to warrant a hammer like that being dropped on him. I mean, this guy must have hit somebody. This guy must have caused some serious damage. This guy must have brained somebody. This guy must have cost somebody an eye if he got 8 games in a shortened season. No, 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 and no. As a quick refresher, this is what actually happened.
3-0. And that's over Bregman's head and goes to the backstop. A 96-mile-an-hour fastball that was closer to the letters on the back of Bregman's jersey than it was to home plate.
That looked intentional to me.
Me too.
Correa 2-for-2 tonight. Look out. That was an off-speed pitch that spills him. Correa now looking out there. Not to say you're trying to throw at me, but to say, man, control it. Putting us in danger.
All right, so after he struck out Carlos Correa, the two exchanged words, and Joe Kelly made some faces. That's right. Joe Kelly has been suspended 8 games for not hitting anybody. Not only did he not hit anybody, he wasn't even ejected from that game. Getting suspended for 8 games in a 162-game season for that would be insane, right? Getting suspended 8 games in a 60-game season for that is bat bleep crazy. That's the equivalent of more than 21 games in a full regular season. More perspective for you. For the past decade, every suspension longer than 20 games has been about PEDs, recreational drugs, domestic violence, substance abuse, and that really weird time when it was about identity fraud. And yet Joe Kelly is getting the equivalent of that for not hitting anybody, for not starting a fight, for not getting ejected in the game. So essentially, you're suspending this guy for 8 games in a shortened season for missing a guy and making faces. Yeah, because that makes so much sense. As it stands right now, Kelly is going to miss more time than the Miami Marlins and half their roster swabbed positive. But at this point, they're going to be back on the field before Joe Kelly. You tell me, Who's the bigger threat to baseball, Joe Kelly or the Miami Marlins? Again, and if it feels like I'm repeating this detail a lot, it's because I can't get my head around it. Joe Kelly did not hit Alex Bregman. He mildly clowned Carlos Correa. And that got him the equivalent of, well, it got him 8 games, but the equivalent of more than 20 in real life. Something else you got to keep in mind. Kelly just got 8 games more than any of the Astros who cheated their way to a world championship. Because that also makes so much more sense. Go ahead and cheat, rip at the fabric and the integrity of the game, but don't strike somebody out, make a face or two at him, and then talk a little junk. Man, we're not having that. You go ahead and cheat. You go ahead and cheat and win a World Series. But man, whatever you do, do not strike a dude out and make faces at him. Man, can you imagine if this guy had actually grazed Alex Bregman or Carlos Correa? Man, Joe Kelly would be banned for life.
For life.
Again, he didn't hit anybody. He wasn't ejected from the game. So exactly what is he being punished for? Missing his target? Making faces at the Astros? Sticking his tongue out at the Astros? Man, this guy shouldn't be fined for making faces at Carlos Correa. He should be given a plaque and a raise because it was awesome. As Dodger pitcher Ross Stripling said,
"The face that he made is one of the funnier things I've ever seen on a baseball field. Now we're all excited because we'll have new shirts to wear for BP."
They're making T-shirts with his face. They're making T-shirts of his face making a face. And he just called it one of the funnier things he's ever seen on a baseball field. Hell yes. Never mind one of the funnier things I've ever seen on a baseball field. That's one of the funnier things I've ever seen in life. You go make that guy a shirt. Make that guy a shirt and then retire his jersey while you're at it. I've got some trivia for you. Here's some baseball trivia. Here is a list of the MLB players who have been suspended for actions allegedly linked to the Astros sign-stealing scandal. Let me read you the list in alphabetical order. The list of players linked to that scandal who have been suspended in alphabetical order. Give me a minute. I'm going to read the entire list. Ready? Kelly, comma, Joe. That's your list. A Dodgers relief pitcher is the only player who has been suspended for anything remotely associated with the Astros sign-stealing scandal. The biggest cheating scandal in 100 years, and it's a Dodgers relief pitcher who is the one who got whacked. Man, how completely and utterly absurd is that? How idiotic is that? In other words, ask Major League Baseball and it will tell you that missing a guy and making faces is worse than cheating the game. And yes, I know the commissioner believed that he effectively had to give immunity to the Astro players in order to get them to participate in the investigation, and that if he tried to suspend individual players, the Players Association would fight him. I get all that. I know all that. But you cannot possibly believe that it's a good look for Major League Baseball that the only player serving any discipline for the cheating scandal is a guy who didn't even play for that team and who didn't hit that team. And I know the commissioner does not want guys going vigilante on the Astros. He doesn't want some form of frontier justice being doled out by the pitchers around the league. I get it. Honestly, I do. I don't want guys doing that either. I don't want guys throwing rocks north of 90 miles per from 60 feet away. It's dangerous as hell. But I'm not even 100% certain that Joe Kelly was actually doing that or throwing at either guy. Nobody has ever accused Joe Kelly of being Greg Maddux 2.0. My man's got some control issues now. He has over the course of his entire career. He's kind of known for that, right? And he was having those same control issues on Tuesday night, even before that pitch to Bregman. Again, have you seen the video from the offseason? The one where he was throwing in his yard and he somehow hit his house.
Oh.
Did you just break the window?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, forget the fact that he hit his house. He missed the net. Have you seen the size of this net? The net is practically the size of the house. It's like a circus tent. It would be tougher to miss the net than to hit the net. And it was a changeup. So now you're going to be hitting him infinitely harder than you hit any of the Astro players for not hitting Astro players and making faces. And then according to Buster Olney, the Dodgers are also pissed because Dusty Baker was screaming at Kelly during the inning from the Astros dugout, and he was only fined. And if that's true, that's Bush League too. Remember that clip that I played yesterday of somebody yelling from the Astros side?
Let's get on the mound, little
Ooh, okay.
Like, quote, get on the mound, little bleeper.
Let's get on the mound, little
Ooh, okay.
All right, so I don't know if that was Dusty or somebody else, but how about that guy? If you're going to suspend a guy for missing a batter and making faces, how about that guy telling that same pitcher to get on the mound, you little bleeper?
Let's get on the mound, little
Did that person get suspended? No. Apparently, that's all right. But jawing at a guy after striking him out and then making a face at him, man, that's going to get you 10 to life. So was the issue that Kelly dropped a B word on Correa? I'm pretty sure that Correa expressed similar sentiments to Kelly. So where is his suspension? Seems like that's not coming. Man, this is so baseball. So baseball. In a week, a month, and a year where the league has puked all over itself at every single turn, they have done it again. And this time, it might just be the dumbest projectile vomit of all. Idiotic. Sounds like I'm fired up about that. I am. And I'm not done either. I've got a lot more to say about that situation and the reaction around Major League Baseball to that situation. Go ahead, hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. It is toll free. Hit me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Get to my Instagram page. Y'all are moving that thing along a little bit. Follow me on Instagram. I've got things on Instagram that I do not put on Twitter, would not put on the show. Inside pics, vacation pics, pics of my encounters with wildlife. You know, you never know. Follow me on Instagram at Jim Rome. I've been throwing up some stories, doing my thing. All right, other topics today in addition to Joe Kelly. I could do 3 hours on that. I won't, but I could. I do want to talk about Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. My man, Michael. Mikey. Michael. Mike. Man, part of the things, or one of the things about this job that's always been tough, there are guys that I like, and there are guys that I like that do something really stupid, and then I have to do my job. This is another one of those examples. And we'll get to that a little bit later on. Also, I'm going to talk politics, but not the way you think I'm going to talk politics. Just because I don't talk politics on this show does not mean that I don't have political opinions. It means I don't share them with you. It doesn't mean I'm apolitical. It doesn't mean I'm not paying attention. I just don't do that here. I don't do that show. It's a sports talk show. Today, I'm going to wade into politics a little bit. A little bit. And you'll see. Like I've always said that you're not here for that. You're not here to get my take on that. In reality, you are. I think a lot of you really want to know what I have to say about the world and where we are politically and who I'm going to vote for. That is, you're here for that until I tell you the opposite of what you want to hear, and then you're not here for that. So you know what I do? I just don't say it. However, today I'm going to say it. Today I will talk politics. I will get into something political. Stay tuned. We're talking about NFL teams that are all in this strange season and the ones that have a shot. I'm going to point out a team that I think made an absolutely amazing move, an amazing NFL move that might put them over the top. And I'm going to say that that team is none other than the Philadelphia Eagles. I will tell you what they did. Ariel Helwani joins me when we come back. You know, frankly, because I've not been giving myself enough credit lately, that was a pretty damn good open. Now, what are you going to do to make it even better? Ask yourself that. Hit me up. You have your telephone number. Or if you want to play on social, do that. If you had trouble finding time to fully wax your car, 303 Touchless Sealant will save you hours. The SI2-based formula is completely touchless, and it's a quicker alternative to waxing your vehicle. And it lasts twice as long. It is so easy to use. You simply spray on and you rinse off. 303 Touchless Sealant provides superior protection against paint fading and provides the ultimate shine in no time at all. It only takes minutes to get that same water-beating protection that you get from a full wax. It saves you hours spent in the garage. It's safe for paint, gel coat, fiberglass, plastics. It can even be used on your windshields and your wheels as well. It can also be used when you're looking to prolong the time in between waxes or ceramic coatings. 303 products have been trusted for over 40 years. They are the official car care products of Mecum Auctions. Available right now at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts, AutoZone, or Advance Auto Parts store. Just go to 303radio.com, 303radio.com for more information.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. I know a lot of you want to talk about fight night involving the Dodgers and Astros. Joe Kelly, an unbelievable lightning rod, incredibly polarizing story. Man, just, let's not get this twisted, right? You can be on either side of this, but you cannot tell me that that 8-game suspension was warranted. It's idiotic. All right, now you want to talk about a real fight game. I'm not sure there's ever been a time where UFC has been more compelling, more riveting than it is right now. There are so many amazing storylines and matchups and setups. Joining me right now to talk about that is a journalist for ESPN, host of Ariel Helwani's MMA show, Ariel and the Bad Guy, DC and Helwani, the People's MMA show, the ESPN MMA Snap show. And on top of that, I will reiterate, he is a friend of this program. Ariel Helwani is my guest. Ariel, it's great to have you back. There is a lot to talk about since we last spoke. But before we do that, how are you and everybody around you doing at this time, Ariel?
Everyone's doing great, Jim. Thank you. I appreciate you asking. I wish I could go home to Canada. I wish I could visit my family in Montreal. I feel a little bit sequestered here in the United States, but unfortunately, that's not in the cards. So I am home and everyone's good. I hope the same for you and yours.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. And I can definitely appreciate what you're saying about your family and being separated. That is so hard. Let me ask you, Ariel, about Robert Whittaker and what you saw against, or what he did against Darren Till over the weekend. And Whittaker touched on this after the fight. But when a champion loses a fight and loses the belt, you're never exactly sure how they're going to respond. Some champs come back better. Some are never the same. What were your impressions of the way he came back?
Yeah, and especially when you consider a guy who openly talked about feeling burnt out, feeling depressed after that fight. You know, the UFC booked him to fight a really tough guy in Jared Cannonier in March, right after his loss to Israel Adesanya, and he got right back on the horse. And then around Christmas time, he was like, nah, I don't have it in me anymore. I'm done. I need some time off. And I respect him for saying that. So not only was he coming back from losing the belt, he was coming back from that. And so I was really curious to see how he would look. All week long, he seemed to be in great spirits. He was smiling. He was in a very happy and jovial mood. Usually he doesn't love doing the media stuff. This time he seemed to be enjoying doing the media stuff. And then we saw it translate into what I thought was a really great performance. I thought he won fair and square. I thought he won 3-2. I thought the judges got it right, 48-47. And now he's right back in that title picture. So I don't think Darren Till loses all that much, you know, in terms of his stock, because he looked really good as well in a big fight against the former champ. But to me, the right guy won on Saturday, and it was great to see Robert Whittaker back to his old self.
I agree with you. I had it scored the same way, 3-2. I thought that was a good fight, interesting fight. Now, as long as we're talking about Fight Island, I want to ask you about Chimaev. Now, I will say this. It's going to sound like kind of a D-bag thing to say, but Ariel, I was texting with Dana White literally the night, like as this was going down, I said, man, actually it was the day before, I cannot wait to see your guy Chimaev. 10 days after what I last saw, this guy is incredible. And then he fires back, Ariel, and you know Dana, like exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Dana's coming through the phone, he's so fired up, and then Chimaev goes out and he does what he did again. What are your lasting memories of his performance?
Okay, well, first of all, I love the name drop there that you were just casually texting.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, that reminds me.
You can go ahead and pick that name up I just dropped.
No, it was great. It was a job. It was very seamless. It was very casual. You've been tweeting a lot on Fight Night about the UFC, and not just like the main events. I've noticed, and I wanted to ask you: is there like a guy sending these tweets for you, or are you all in? Because sometimes I see you tweeting about like prelim fights. I was like, is Jim watching at 3 o'clock
come
on the
on.
West Coast? Are you
come
all in
on,
like that?
Come on! You know better, of course, man. Nobody tweets for me.
Okay, I'm impressed. I have to say, I'm really impressed.
About it, man.
Yeah, good job. So. Chimaev, to me, is as advertised. I mean, all the hype is very real. I'm one of these guys, by the way, who is all into, like, the slow build. You know, give him a couple of jabrones here, build him up like that, give him a couple of, you know, easy fights, non-ranked guys and all that stuff with him. I think he's a blessing and a curse because I actually think that he could fight top five guys right now, and I think he could beat some of those top five guys. But the curse is, I don't know if any of those top five guys are going to want to fight him anytime soon. I don't know if anyone is going to want to fight him. I mean, unless you're an unranked guy who's just trying to get into the good graces of the UFC, the secret is out, and it's going to be really hard for the UFC to find high-level guys to fight him right now because he is so good, because he is so dominant. What sticks out to me is he's not just one of these wrestlers who wants to lay on top of you and ride out the decision. He wants to actually finish you in the first round, whether it's via submission like he did the first time he fought in the UFC or via TKO like in the second time. And also, by the way, we all know what he's going to try to do very early on, take you down and then beat you up, and he's effective in doing so. I think the final tally was 68 total strikes to none this past Saturday. I mean, that's just absurd. And Rhys McKee, his opponent, isn't a can. He's a really good young fighter from Northern Ireland. So, yeah, I would be shocked if this time next year we're not talking about Khamzat Chimaev as either a top contender at 170 or already about to fight for the belt. Something went horribly wrong. I'd be shocked if it's the opposite.
No, I think you're right. Not only was he not a can, he was supposed to be a test. And then when you look at Dana White, what we know about Dana White, he loves guys that want to stay active. He loves guys that finish their fights, and that's Chimaev. Now, also, Ariel Helwani is my guest. We have a date, finally, an official date for Khabib and Justin Gaethje, October 24th. Man, I'm telling you, this might be, I don't want to get too prone to hyperbole, but this is one of the most anticipated fights ever. Styles make fights. Every sport is about matchups. What kind of thoughts do you have on this matchup?
Oh, the only thing I was looking forward to more than this fight was the debut of my guy, Nate Pearson, yesterday for your Toronto Blue Jays. Jim, sorry, I had to slide that in there. Listen, this is a huge fight, an important fight. It's one of the best fights on paper that the UFC can make right now in 2020 because I believe Khabib Nurmagomedov is the most dominant force in the history of the UFC. I don't say that lightly. When you're 28-0, 12-0 in the UFC octagon, only lost one round in all those fights, and a lot of them, as you know, went the distance, and that one round, of course, was round three to Conor McGregor. That's just absurd. I mean, no one has ever done that, and he just continues to get better. Now, the two questions regarding Khabib are the layoff. By the time he fights, it will have been 13 and a half months since his last fight. I don't think that's an issue because the last time he fought, he was off for 11 months, and he looked better than ever. The other big question, of course, is the recent passing of his father, Abdulmanap, due to coronavirus. And Abdulmanap wasn't just his father. He was his mentor. He was his coach. He was his best friend. I mean, if you ever saw an interview with Khabib talking about his dad, you could tell just how much he adored him. So, you know, we wonder how he'll respond to all of that against a guy, Justin Gaethje, who, let me just say right now, Justin Gaethje, in my opinion, has the best chance of anyone in this sport to beat Khabib, given his wrestling, which I think is very underrated, given his striking, and given his power. If the Justin Gaethje that shows up on October 24th is the same one that showed up back in May against Tony Ferguson, I think he has a really good chance of being the first guy to beat Khabib Nurmagomedov. That's how good he is. That's how good he's become. Early on in his UFC career, he was very reckless. He's not reckless anymore. He's a very smart fighter. And especially if he has the champ, Kamaru Usman, in his training camp, as he helped Kamaru prepare for his title fight back in early July, that could be a really interesting X factor going into this fight.
I would love to add something to that, but I really can't. I think you laid that out perfectly. And Gaethje, to me, I think you're right. If he shows up the way he did against Ferguson, and I've got no reason not to think that he will. I mean, this guy's amazing. I think you're right. This wrestling obviously is underrated. He was a great, great wrestler in college, and we see what he can do with his striking, and he's kind of rethought and reinvented himself. But this other angle, Ariel, about Khabib, he has suggested that he would like to fight Gaethje in October, and then GSP in April. All right, so that's interesting. You spoke to GSP earlier this week about that matchup. What did GSP make of that? Is he interested? Is he retired? Where's his head at?
So this was so interesting because I sent him the quote from Dana White talking to ESPN and saying, like, hey, you know, I would be finally interested in doing this if this is what Khabib wants, especially for his retirement fight. And I sent it to him, and then he calls me right away. He had no idea. He had not seen it yet. And it was fascinating to listen to him talk because he kept saying, damn. He kept saying it in French. I speak French. I'm from Quebec as well. So he kept talking in French. Really. He's like, damn. Just when I thought I was done, they pull me back in. I think mentally he had come to terms with the fact that they were not going to give him this fight. They weren't going to book it. It would never materialize. And he had moved on with his life. And now he sees this, and he's like, oh, my God. And then I saw, or at least I heard because I was on the phone, the wheels turning. And it was fascinating to just be a part of that because he was like, okay, I have to call my coach. I have to do this. My weight is good. And then I was like, George, you know the fight's not happening anytime soon. Like, they haven't offered you the fight, but I could just see, like, the competitor in him start to just switch right away. And then, you know, he started talking about how he feels like he could be the one and what weight it would be at and what his training would be and how he's in great shape. And it left me with the impression that if this fight did materialize, if they booked it, if they tried to book it, it wouldn't be that hard of a negotiation. He doesn't want to be champion. He doesn't care about the lightweight title. He's been there, done that. He just wants to be the one guy who can beat Khabib. He wants to have that L on his own record in terms of Khabib, you know, being the only loss that of his career would be to GSP. He really likes that. He likes the idea that it's the only challenge out there, in his opinion, in MMA, and that would be his final fight. So let's see. Khabib said a couple of days ago, you know, Gaethje in October, George in April. For the first time in a while, it actually feels like this super fight has some legs to it.
Ariel Helwani, my guest. One last thing. You know, there's no way you and I get together and talk and don't have a conversation, or at least hit the topic of Conor McGregor. Does he face the winner of this fight, or do you think the UFC is going to keep him from fighting until they can get fans into an arena once again?
That's a really good question. I thought you were going to bring up the fact that my partner, Chael Sonnen, was on the Smack Off and talked smack about me, and I didn't get a chance to
respond. I can get there. Okay, so we have one more thing to talk about, but get this first.
I was a little bit hurt by that whole turn of events. But in any way, I think that Conor is being put on the sidelines because there's no gate right now. They're not eager to bring him back. I think it's a travesty that he hasn't fought. By now, he should have had two fights in the UFC this year. You have an eager, healthy, motivated, staying out of trouble Conor McGregor, and you can't get him to fight. I mean, that to me is just, it's a travesty. There's no other word. And it's unfortunate, but because he generates so much money with the gates, they're trying to drag their feet. But, I mean, if you just look at the tea leaves, it might be a while before you can generate, you know, some gate revenue with fights these days. So I would like to see him fight before that, because especially, okay, let's say that's a hard fight and the guys are beating up. That's October 24th. The winner's only, you know, like he said it himself, April, right? So we're not going to see Conor for a year and a half. That's absurd. Get him a Tony Ferguson. Get him a Nate Diaz. Get him a Dustin Poirier. Get him someone, because Conor fighting is just good for everyone. He's a rising tide that lifts all boats. He wants to stay active. He doesn't want to wait. So I don't see what the problem is here.
All right, then. So your final note, you got on the wrong side of your partner, Chael Sonnen, yeah, who did show up for the Smack Off, took a run at you. And hey, listen, I mean, I've been there. I've been there twice. What's your sense of that? What's your reaction to it?
Well, the first thing was he said to me, hey, are you going to join me on the Smack Off later today? And I was like, I didn't get the invite. And he started to pretend like I did get the invite and I was backing out. I never got the invite. In fact, I have never been invited to the Smack Off. And then I find out.
Yes, you have. You had a golden ticket, bro. You absolutely were invited. You had a golden ticket, remember?
When? When was this?
The day I gave it to you?
I don't remember that.
You don't. You absolutely had an invite. You were one of the rare ones. The golden ticket is like an invite only. It's like an at-large bid. You earned it one day on the show, and you were invited. You were in the field.
Wow. You know what? Now I feel horrible because I don't recall that ever happening, but I appreciate it. I didn't feel, you know, I'm a polite
Canadian. You are forgiven.
I can't just barge into your show and start, you know, throwing bombs, but I'll just say this. If Chael and I were face-to-face in a Smack-Off or any kind of off, I would bury him where he stands. He's a low-rent, mid-tier fighter who never made it to the top, who wishes he was as successful as I am, and he holds that grudge against me. It's unfortunate, but them's the breaks, Chael. I've been carrying you on my shoulders, on my back for the last 2+ years since we've been at ESPN together, and quite frankly, I'm tired of it. So you could send that to him. You could put it in an envelope. You could send it via fax, email, tweet, Instagram, whatever you want, but I'm tired of his shenanigans, and I feel like I just beat him 10-7. 10-8 maybe, probably 10-7.
Dude, 10-7 is like the guy's dead. He's in a body bag. All right, so Ariel, understand this. It's, for the record, it's documented. You were offered that golden ticket on July 26th of last year. Maybe they kind of, listen, yeah, it's, I mean, we have it. It's documented. We have it on tape. Maybe you forgot. Maybe it went over your head, but I want you to listen very carefully to what I'm saying to you right now. With the strength of that rant that you just had, you are again getting a golden ticket, and you are invited to the Smack Off next year as you were this year. All right, so let's make sure there's no confusion here. You are invited yet again.
Okay. I suspect Chael won't show up because of the beatdown I just gave him, but if he does decide to show up, now I know that I have the golden ticket. I apologize for the confusion. I just thought Chael, you know, and let's be honest, Chael's known to be a guy who likes to, you know, pull a fast one on people from time to time. I thought he was pulling a fast one on me.
No. Now you're set. Now we're squared away. Now we're leveled up, and now we understand. So yes, you had your say today. I bet that felt good. Well done. And now you are invited to the party next year as well. Ariel, nice job. Nice to have you back. And no, I mean, I'm going to see you or talk to you before then, but I know that I've got a date to talk to you about a year from right now.
Amen. Thanks as always, Jim. Always
Amen.
A pleasure.
You got it, Ariel. Nice job. Ariel Helwani. All right, then. So he was put off that Chael came in and lit him up and said, hey, you know, what about me? How come I didn't get a chance to respond? But you did. But he didn't know. And now he knows. Now you know, so now you go. All right, then. 1-800-636-8686. So Chael just was brought up. Chael's going to come up again in another take later on in the program. Actually, by the way, and Chael's another super polarizing figure. I'm really glad that he showed up in the Smack Off. It was good to have him back. And by the way, Chael is invited to come next year too. All right. When we come back, if it sounds like I'm hyped up on UFC again, I am. That, to me, and the sport and that company and Dana White have had a miraculous run in recent years, but it's as good now, even during the pandemic, as it has ever been. It's as good now, even in empty arenas, as it's ever been because of the matchups, because of the styles. Styles make fights. Matchups are everything in sports. And he has got such an unbelievably long roster right now and list of riveting guys, compelling storylines. And if it's not your thing, I get that. I'm not here to convert you, but I am here to tell you this. It is my thing. I love it. I love it. Can't get enough. All right, when we come back, I'll open it up to you. Meantime, ran heavy there, so I've got a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, I'm going to run right through this because I want to get this out of the way. This is important. I mentioned that I never talk politics on this show, and that's by design. I said today I'm finally ready to do so. And the reaction already has been interesting, like, Rome, man, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Like, you're my guy, but if you say the wrong thing, and then some of you are like, good, it's about time, it's well overdue. Again, I want to say this. I understand that the overwhelming majority of you come to the program and to sports talk radio in general to get away from all the noise that's blaring in our country right now. Given the current climate with a pandemic raging and an election coming up, sports talk radio feels like one of the last remaining places where an escape is possible. That said, it's different now. This is 2020. Even the lines around this genre can get blurred. And be warned, this is one of those times. I've thought about this. I didn't know whether or not to go there. I've thought long and hard about it, but I think it's time. TMZ is exclusively reporting that a certain somebody has entered a certain political race in a certain city. I need to comment. That city is Huntington Beach. That political race is city council. That person is Tito Ortiz. All right, so how many of you thought that I was going to say Silk Bra right there? I mean, it would make sense, right? Silk is a longtime HB native who does not shy away from politics, who has logged a lot of time at City Hall recently trying to change things. He often refers to himself as the official, unofficial mayor of Huntington Beach. And you know he's got time on his hands as a substitute teacher during a pandemic. And his campaign would obviously have bottomless pockets thanks to his wife. So yes, I could see how you think that it was Silk making a run at political office, but it's not. It's Tito Ortiz, the longtime MMA fighter, born and raised in HB, who runs with the handle, the Huntington Beach Bad Boy. Now, I don't want to get into the politics of Tito. I mean, I don't want to run a misdirection on you, but I mean, I got to be careful, right? I got to be real. And by the way, it's not even my business. It's not my business, and I really don't care to make it my business. I don't live in HB. I don't vote in HB. I really don't care about the city council in HB. I just don't. Also, it's not that hard to find out what this guy believes. All you have to do is take a two-second scroll, write down his social media feed, and you'll know. If you're curious, you can go find that information out pretty easily on your own. Now, here is what I do care about. I care about the fact that the HB City Council has three seats open this November, which means Tito has got a pretty good look at nailing down a spot. A spot at the corner of Yorktown and Main in Surf City, USA. And to me, Tito potentially winning means a couple of things. Number one, that's a spot on the city council, which would expose Tito to a lot of back and forth with concerned citizens of HB. All right? Remember, this is a guy from the fight game. And the fight game is equal parts fighting, equal parts smack talking. Those cards do not sell themselves. Tito was no stranger to a back and forth on a microphone in front of a bunch of people. I just hope that this guy can flip the switch and change gears between a lifetime of trading verbal haymakers with guys that he's about to fight and little old ladies who want a ban on skateboarding on sidewalks. I mentioned that Chael would come up again. This is what I'm talking about. Tito was not afraid to try to body bag somebody who pops off to him. Just ask Chael before their Bellator fight back in January of 17.
Tito, go ahead. Tell him what I do so well.
Well, he talks well. His mouth has gotten him every fight, big fight that he's had.
Tito always says I'm using my mouth to get my opportunities. The only person I know that made money using their mouth is his ex-wife.
Well, just to correct you, I was never no marriage. You're a punk, dude. That's what you call class right here compared to no class.
That was a nasty line.
No class.
Me.
No class at all. No class.
They don't call you the bad guy for nothing.
A bad girl.
Hey, listen, I'm not saying that Tito got the better of that exchange with Chael because he pretty much didn't. Listen, Chael does not win all of his fights inside the cage, but he's pretty close to undefeated outside of the cage, especially when it comes to murdering people verbally. Chael is almost undefeated. Only real blemish on his record there is when he tried to tell me that he did not hammer Lance Armstrong. Chael, I could be wrong. That sounds a lot like you.
Jim, that doesn't sound anything like me. Have the callers call in. There's no way anybody will think that sounds like me.
Chael, honestly, because, I mean, respectfully, it sounds exactly like you.
Sounds like a guy with a Hispanic accent to me. Maybe I had a bad connection, but I thought you were kidding around with that voiceover. That's certainly not me.
All right, so you're telling me that's not you, Chael.
I can't say it to you any clearer, brother.
Brother.
I think that's what Ariel was talking about when he mentioned a 10-7 round. But then again, this is not about Chael, this is about Tito. And whereas calling Chael a bad girl was a bad look for Tito, anybody who tries to roll up on him, should he win that seat, is going to have a bad time, I think, with the former pugilist. That said, it is a job. It's an important job. If he gets that job, he has to know his room. I just hope that when things do get contentious down at City Hall, if he gets that seat, Tito does not start sarcastically calling the town of HB a bunch of bad girls.
Bad girl.
There's a certain level of decorum needed for public office. And it's going to be hard to go from a lifetime of great smack to just sitting there and listening. But apparently he's up for it. So that's my first take about Tito running for the HP City Council. My second one essentially is the same one you all have. Quote, communist Silk and conservative Tito are on a collision course that is almost too good to be true. And I don't want to get ahead of myself here or accidentally campaign for somebody on the radio, but how freaking bad do we all want to hear Silk v. Tito at City Hall? These guys live physically in the same zip code and politically in two totally different stratospheres. And if Tito dares to put a study from Lithuania in front of Silk, brah, then it's going to be fireworks at City Hall. Fireworks the likes that nobody has ever seen before. Imagine Silk in his board shorts and Vans screaming for the enforcement of rules while Tito sits high above on the bench resisting every primal urge to come down there and put the guy in a rear naked chokehold and beat him senseless with a rolled up case study from the Baltic Republics. Then imagine 25-time smack-off champion Rich Flores trying to break it up. Be the best thing ever. And now, it's possible. It's very possible. It may even be likely, because there are three seats open in 3 months. And Tito, one of the famous faces of HB, is going for one. And if he likes calling bad guys bad girls, then he should rip a line from Mike and Indy for the first time he sees Silk show up at City Hall.
My calls make Silk Bra look like silk panties.
My calls make Silk Bra look like silk panties.
My calls make Silk Bra look like silk panties.
So what I'm saying is move over Chuck Liddell. Move over Chael Sonnen. Tito has a new rival, and his name is Silk Panties.
My calls make Silk Bra look like silk panties.
Bad girl.
Silk panties. My calls make Silk Bra look like silk panties.
Silk panties.
Bad girl.
Silk panties.
All right, I told you I didn't want to wade into politics, but I really had no choice.
Bad girl.
Silk panties.
Silk panties.
Silk panties.
Bad girl.
Silk panties.
Bad girl.
Silk panties.
I tell you, man, I normally I would say that I hate to come off a brilliant hour of content like that and not go right to reaction. But I'm going to go right to interviews, but it's all right today because I've got two really good interviews. All right, so keep that in mind. If you have reactions, send it or hold it or both because I will get to it. When we come back, Patriots reporter Tom Curran. After that, my guy Dave Stewart. So we go back to back and then we're wide open the rest of the way. Silk panties.
Silk panties.
Stay tuned.